year. Just your thoughts again on Will and what he's accomplished and your hopes for his future.
Well, if I can say this without choking up, you know, here's a kid who has really gone through some tough times, and what he cares about is everybody else. Thank you, Will. You made me a better person. I'm sorry.
No, no. Thank you're you. Fine.
Thank you, Mr.
You're fine. Wow. Folks, this is if you're listening, this is a sign for you at home to be the best human being that you can be because of what Will has done and the example that he's showing all of us here on this program this Saturday. This is your moment to be the best person you can be because there are no excuses, really. And Will, you are living proof of that.
Thank you.
I want to thank both of you for joining us and for sharing your story. Again, we have a U.S. Presidential Scholar semifinalist, William Russell Vollmar III, and the principal of Bigfoot Union High School, Dan Dowden. Until next time, bye, everybody.
This program originally aired May 9th.
This is WGTD. You're listening to Education Matters, the only weekly broadcast in southeastern Wisconsin devoted exclusively to a discussion of local educational issues. Education Matters is co-hosted by Karen Sconsert, an associate professor of education at Carthage College, Jeff Rasmussen, a retired Racine Unified teacher and administrator who currently serves as president of the Racine Area Retired Educators Association, Steve Brown, a retired professor of educational leadership, and former Kenosha Unified School Superintendent Joe Mangi. Now, here's today's Education Matters moderator.
Hello, I'm Karen Sconsert, and this is Education Matters. Today, you will hear another program in our special series recorded from home due to and about the COVID-19 crisis and how it is affecting our educational programs in Southeast Wisconsin. Today, we have guests from Carthage College's Urban Teacher Preparation Program and their cooperating teachers. We'll learn a little bit about that program, what it has been like for urban teacher prep students who are currently student teaching to teach from home in collaboration with their cooperating teachers, what's it like to make videos and create lessons and work with children through the computer. So, full disclosure, I'm the chair of the education department at Carthage College, and I teach the first course in the urban education minor, so I know a little bit about this program, but not nearly as much as our guests. So welcome, guests. First, we have Adriana Santana, who's a student. So could you tell us your hometown and the school where you're student teaching, Adriana?
Yeah, I'm from Elma, Michigan, and right now I'm at Julian Thomas Elementary in Racine.
Excellent. And is one of these teachers your cooperating teacher?
Yeah, Tonya is my mentor teacher.
Excellent. Okay, so then let's start with Tonya. Tonya, can you tell us about yourself? What's your name? Where you teach? A little bit about your teach from home situation.
My name is Tonya Wilson, and I presently teach fourth grade at Julian Thomas Elementary School. And as Adriana says, she is my teacher candidate that has been with me for the past 3 years, going on four. We have had some very fun times, despite what's going on around us with our teaching lessons on Mondays and Thursdays through virtual learning. And Miss Adriana has made videos. I have had to really change a lot about the way I actually teach and learn more about navigating the computer to be able to teach lessons from home. So I've actually turned my dining room into like a little classroom, and the walls are full of Post-its, big Post-its, and it's a challenge, but it can happen. And so far, you know, we wish that we could have everybody involved, all of the students, but unfortunately, we haven't had all students participate. But we are thankful for those that have joined us.
Great. And then do you have a lot of people in your home while you're trying to teach, or are you do you have the space to do it and the quiet that you need or not?
Fortunately, I do have the space. I am not have a house full of people. I don't have to worry about a dog at this time, where some people have their dogs, but I used to have a dog, but at this time, no. And I don't have minor children or anything that would be running around needing, you know, attention as well while I'm trying to teach.
So you're lucky in that sense.
I am very lucky in that sense.
And I just want to remind the listeners that we're all recording from our homes. So if you do hear pets or children or doorbells or occasionally a car alarm on the street where I live, please forgive us. I think we'll just leave it in for authenticity. And then our next guest is Amy. Amy, can you tell us about yourself, your name, where you teach, a little bit about your teaching from home situation?
Yep, my name is Amy Simon. I also teach at Julian Thomas. I teach second grade. I also have a teacher candidate from the program at Carthage. And we have just been trying to get creative and reach out to our families the best way that we can, in a way that works for our situation and in their situations, knowing that everybody's situation at home is very different. So just trying to be supportive of the students, of the families, just doing what we can. I do have two elementary age children at home, so trying to manage their video chats and their classwork and their lessons and trying to teach them and give them what they need and juggle my responsibilities and you know, supporting my students in my classroom and squeezing in meetings and video chats and all of that can be kind of challenging, but it just takes a little organization, and every night we sit down and we look at, okay, what's our agenda for tomorrow? Who's got what going on? And we kind of plan it out and go day by day that way.
Great. Thank you. Welcome also, Amy. And last but certainly not least is Siobhan Williams. Can you tell us a little bit about yourself? And then also we're going to ask you some questions about the Urban Teacher Prep Program.
Yeah, awesome. Thank you for having us today. My name is Siobhan Williams, and I am from Chicago, and I've been at Carthage College for a little over 5 years now. I'm an adjunct professor there. I teach in the education department, and also I'm the program manager for the Urban Teacher Prep Program. I do have a little one and a school-age child at home and a dog, so I have every situation happening. I don't have a doorbell, so that's the one thing I don't worry about, but the dog constantly barks, and the two-year-old needs a lot of attention, and my husband is also an educator, so we've just been welcoming the change, you know, the difference, the challenges that we have between balancing our work schedules, our meetings, as well as trying to do interactive and fun, engaging activities for our children. So it's been exciting, to say the least.
It's always, it's really a challenge, I think, when you have really young kids at home. I have a 15-year-old, and he's like been training for this all his life. He's could not be happier than to be at home and independently learning on the computer. But I know that is not true for a lot of people, and it wouldn't have been for him when he was 8 or 10. So we're just lucky for now. So, Siobhan, we're talking about the Urban Teacher Prep Program, and I'm sure that most of our listeners know nothing about it. So if you could just say a little bit about what this is about, how it works, how it's organized. We've already heard the two teachers describe the student teachers as teacher candidates, and they've also said that they've been with them for a while, which is part of what makes Urban Teacher Prep different. So if you could talk a little bit about that.
Yeah, absolutely. This program was initiated in collaboration with the Education Department and Dr. Michelle Hancock, who is a professor at Carthage College, as well as the program director. Under her leadership, I manage the program, which we currently have about 15 teacher candidates who work with our teacher coaches, and we have about 18 teacher coaches who work with our teacher candidates at the beginning of their freshman year. And the purpose, I'm just going to read from our impact statement. The purpose of our program is to identify, instruct, inspire, and increase the number of resilient, highly effective teachers committed to teaching in high need urban school settings to close the opportunity gap and achievement gap for our students in urban areas. And in doing so, we identify, instruct, and inspire with practical experiences that happen in the classroom all 4 years. And those clinical hours are more than double what the average student teacher would have in a traditional college program. So we're excited that they get this exposure. And we're also excited that out of the three graduates that we have two graduates that have contracts currently to teach in the upcoming school year. And we have one who is, the other one is teaching for the summer in Milwaukee, and hopefully she'll get hired on at that school in fall as well. She hasn't confirmed that yet, but it's very likely that she will. So all three of our graduates are employed, and the principals couldn't be happier with these outstanding students who have that urban experience from the very beginning of their education.
So why are they called teacher candidates and teacher coaches instead of student teachers and cooperating teachers?
So we have, that's a good question. We have teacher candidates, teacher coaches. We just use that terminology. It's just kind of stuck with us for these. This is our fourth year, but it's very similar. These teacher candidates start student teaching day one, their freshman year. And we wanted to make the difference because we don't want them to think that, we don't want people to get confused with the traditional program, mm-hmm. because the freshmen typically don't student teach until, you don't start student teaching until your last year of college. So, that's just the term that we use. It is very interchangeable, but we just kind of stick with it. And the teacher coaches, we use that as well. It is a cooperating teacher, but just to make the difference between the traditional program of the cooperating teachers, we have teacher coaches who start and they also continue after our teacher candidates graduate. They still have contact with their teacher coaches for at least a year or two during their first 2 years of teaching in the classroom. So they still have that coach with them as opposed to the traditional program where they're done with their cooperating teacher after they graduate.
So you said they start freshman year. So can you describe how it's different for urban teacher prep students compared to just regular student teachers at Carthage?
Yeah, as soon as we do recruiting for freshmen, and we also have sophomores. Some start as late as sophomore year, but we can't, the program is rigorous. We don't start anyone after sophomore year. So our elementary education major students are recruited freshman and sophomore year. And the very first day that they agree that they're all in for the program, they get right in and start working in the classroom. And the first year that they start is usually observation. They can do some one-on-one instruction or some co-teaching. And as they go on through the program, as they progress through the education courses at Carthage, they're allowed or they're asked to do more. Lesson planning, full instruction. And we also have them involved in community events in the school. So we get them fully submerged in the whole school community environment. As opposed to the traditional track where you just do your coursework and the very last year, the very last semester is when you start your student teaching hours. So you get a lot more practical hours in the field. You get to build that relationship with your teacher coach. And these students, these teacher candidates are paired with their same mentor teacher coaches for the entire program. However, at Julian Thomas, one of the great things is that we have five teacher candidates there currently, and they all kind of pass them around and support each other. So we might have a teacher candidate. Adriana works directly with Tonya, but Tonya may ask her to go into another teacher coach's classroom and experience a different grade level And so they get to work with another teacher coach, and we know how long they've been in the school system. We know what their practices are, so they've been vetted, and it gives us a good sense of community and support for our teacher candidates in that way.
Okay, thank you. I'm sure some more of this will come out as we talk to the teachers and to Adriana, who's a teacher candidate. Any of you are welcome to start. Tell us a little bit about your school and your class. Who do you teach? Maybe we'll start with Amy. Can you do it?
Well, I teach second grade. Julian Thomas is one of the urban schools. So we have a very diverse group of learners. They all come in with different backgrounds and different needs. So a lot of what I do depends greatly on the relationships that I build with the students and the families, and just getting to know them, each individual student, and what they need, and just trying to support the students and the families in whatever way that we can. And I think our school, Julian Thomas, is a community school. We have a lot of community partnerships, and I think that we do a nice job of supporting the whole family, and we do a lot more than just focus on those academic needs that the kids have, but we do a lot with the social emotional needs as well.
Okay. Adriana and Tonya, you share a classroom, is that correct?
Yes.
So if you, I don't know who wants to talk about it, but tell us a little bit about your classroom. You're in Julian Thomas as well, correct?
Mm-hmm. We are.
Okay. And what grade level?
Grade 4, fourth graders. And like Amy was saying, you know, we have a group of diverse learners, and we try to do our best to meet the needs of each of those learners within the classroom and even outside of the classroom, building those relationships with them and their parents or their families. As she said, we recently became a community school. This was our first full year as a community school. So those partnerships that we have with other organizations outside of the school has been really beneficial to us, and you know, I know we're all looking forward to continuing that. We were just recently had a clinic that is going to be available for community members that is part of our or on our property. It's not the school's clinic per se, but a health clinic for community people to take advantage of or to come to get some of the needs that they may have regarding their health. So that's going to be something new for us when we do go back into the buildings as they are finishing that up. But if Adriana wants to say anything about our class, she's welcome to as well.
Yeah, I think each year we've just had a very different group of kids. Their personalities have all been so different. The way that they are as a class has been so different, and it's been a really great experience to really be immersed in that and get to experience different classes, even within the same grade. This year, I feel like we had a very high energy class, and so it was really interesting to play off of that as opposed to more mellow classes that we've had in the past.
I'm going to do a quick reintroduction. You are listening to WGTD HDFM. I'm your host, Karen Sconzert, and this is Education Matters. This discussion of Carthage College's Urban Teacher Prep Program's response to COVID-19 is archived at wgtd.org on the Education Matters page. You are invited to listen again or you can find our WGTD Education Matters Facebook page and join in a discussion there. So, a cat just ran through my living room and it sounded like a horse because that's how cats sound. Anyway, just so you know, that was that noise. I wanted to ask you all, see if you can kind of bring yourself back to, it was about 2 months ago when we all suddenly heard that we were going to be working from home. So what were sort of your first moves thinking about how you were going to work with your students? And, you know, what did you grab from your classroom? And what did you know about doing this? And how was that first weekend? Were you just frantically trying to figure all these things out? What happened?
I think for me, I was that first, when we were notified that we wouldn't be coming back, and I really had no idea what we were going to be doing. I didn't know. I knew that in order for kids to have some teaching to happen, they would have to have some, you know, devices and things at home for us to teach them in, you know, over virtually. But I know when we were able to go back to the room to get some things, I grabbed, you know, parent contact information and scores and things like that from MAP testing, and I grabbed, you know, lessons that I thought that if even, you know, my mind was thinking that I was going to be possibly even dropping things off to kids, and I grabbed two different sets of novels that the kids could read, thinking, okay, well, I'm going to have to mail some things to them. So it really took me off guard because I really wasn't thinking that this was going to be as serious as it was, as it turned out to be, and that we would, you know, be out. No one knew, I'm sure, that we would be out of the buildings like this. So I grabbed things like that, you know, novels. I grabbed parent contact information, test scores, lesson plan books, and things like that, so that, you know, whatever it was that I could do to move forward to help them, I wanted to be able to do.
Okay. Amy, what about you? When you first heard this was going to happen, you probably had about 30 minutes to decide what to bring with you.
My first instinct was just to reach out to the families and see, just check in on them and see how they were doing, kind of see what they needed or how I could support them. And then we did get just a brief moment to get into our classrooms. And I grabbed a lot of the same things that Miss Wilson grabbed. I also grabbed some boxes of pencils that I brought home so I could sharpen in case, you know, students needed pencils. I would at least have that to deliver to them if I was able to. I did not expect to be out the rest of the school year, like it turned out to be.
Right. That's the other part of it, is that, oh, we thought maybe it would be 3 weeks or something when it first started. So it's a little tough. So I know one of the staple items for teachers has been to sort of try to create these brief teaching videos so that students can watch at home when they're able to get access and kind of do it on their own time. And so Adriana, have you made any of these videos, and what has that been like?
I've made a good number of videos for my students to watch. Me and Miss Wilson actually made a class Facebook page so that we could share those videos there. We felt that was a platform that the most of our parents could reach. I did one lesson. I recorded it, and I also taught it on our Google Hangout sessions that we do about the three states of matter. I made a big poster, and we went over the three states of matter, and then we saw how water changes through the three states of matter, and how it goes from a solid as an ice cube to a glass of water as a liquid to steam as a gas. And some of the students really had good questions about the states of matter and One of our students asked us at the end if slush was a liquid or a solid. So they were really thinking, and it's just really interesting to see how they interact with the virtual learning.
Mm-hmm. And then how do they interact? Do they then put comments on the Facebook page, or how do you know what they're thinking about it? Or do they create things and send them to you?
Yeah, so when I post them on Facebook, they do have the opportunity to comment, and sometimes when I record them and with the intent to put them on our Facebook page, I do ask them to leave a comment, or I ask a question in the lesson and ask them to answer it in the comments. When we do our Google Hangout sessions, they do ask questions as I'm teaching, mm-hmm. and also after, and I feel like they're just as engaged virtually as they were in the classroom.
Yeah, it might be more fun for them in some levels, and also I think especially at the beginning, everybody was kind of excited about these group video chats. I'm a little less excited than I used to be. I don't know about the rest of you, but at the beginning, it was really interesting. So I'm wondering, Amy and Tonya, have you also made some videos for your students?
I have not made any videos. Like Adriana was saying, we have our virtual classroom on Mondays and Thursdays, but as far as a video, I have not made a video. Adriana forgot to mention about her reading that she has done as well. She's videotaped herself and reading a story, and the kids are definitely enjoying that. They get to enjoy listening to a story being read to them. So, but as far as me, no, I have not done a video myself.
Amy, have you made any videos, or how do you handle most of your classroom interaction?
I have. After my teacher candidate did her first read aloud, and I posted it on our Google Classroom, I got some positive feedback that the kids enjoyed listening to that story, so I decided to do a read aloud each week, so the kids get one story from Ms. M and one read aloud from me. Each week on our Google Classroom, which is fun. One thing I realized when I was making some of those first videos, I really miss the interaction between the students as I'm reading the book. And I thought that was really interesting. Just there are so many times where reading a story, we would stop and get the kids' feedback, or, you know, find out what the kids were thinking, or they could talk to each other, or, you know, you just miss their excitement too that they bring to the classroom. So that was different. But we also offer two weekly chats as well, like Miss Wilson does with the fourth grade. And that's just another way to stay connected to the kids and get to see them. And in reflecting on some of those this past week or two, it's really interesting to get a glimpse inside the kids' homes too. And I think that's one aspect of teaching that a lot of people maybe overlook sometimes, is, you know, getting to know the kids as a whole and their whole families. And this really sheds a light on the rest of their life and not just themselves as students in a classroom. So that's been kind of fun.
Yeah, I've heard that from other people too, that it's sort of like there were times when communities were smaller or schools were more community-based where teachers frequently made home visits, and it's almost like you're making home visits and they're making home visits to you as well. They probably get to know a little bit more about you and your family and who have what your home looks like and all the rest of that as well, I'm thinking. Is that true? Adriana, are you actually in Michigan doing these videos and stuff?
Right now I'm in Illinois with one of my friends, but I will be in Michigan continuing to do the virtual lessons.
I wonder if the students will find that interesting, that they can talk to you in a whole different state on the other side of the lake.
Yeah, I hope so. I think it's interesting. It's kind of cool.
It seems like you've got a geography lesson waiting to happen once you do that.
Yeah.
Yes. So, what are some ways that any of you might teach differently in the future, you know, even if you are face-to-face? I know we don't really know what's going to happen in the fall yet, but just what are some things that you've taken from the online teaching experience that you'd like to continue or bring into your classroom?
I will make sure that my students are familiar with using Google Classroom and different ways to post and interact with each other on there. In case we would ever find ourselves in a situation like this again, then at least the students are familiar with it, so that they might be able to help their parents through the process as well. Mm-hmm. But I'll definitely do a better job of using technology consistently in my classroom, even with the little ones.
Mm-hmm. Tanya or Adriana?
I agree totally. Amy, I have to say, Amy knows a little bit more about technology than I do, or the Google Classroom setup. So I'm learning more and more, even though we have used it in our in the classroom. But I will certainly be making sure that I continue with these PDs that we are required to do anyway, so that I can learn and incorporate that into our classroom. And Adriana has been a very big help with me as well with that. And I look forward to us having a Facebook page again for the upcoming school year, being able to communicate and teaching, making sure that the students know how to navigate. And like Ms. Simon said, to be able to help their parents if something, you know, if we've had have to have a to be at home for any reason or not, just to be able to help their parents to navigate with technology.
Right. I think one of the things that we all know is that when we have the summer to think ahead a little bit, we'll probably be planning our school year a little differently. I mean, this was such a big surprise, maybe shouldn't have been quite as big of a surprise. We were talking about it for about maybe 10 days before it happened. But 10 days is not enough time to get everything that you would have done in person online. And so I think, you know, listeners should be aware that we're all thinking a little differently for the future, just about what school's going to look like in general. And I don't think anyone knows. I was speaking to one of my students this morning who will be student teaching in the fall, and she was saying that they're not sure what they're going to do. This is in a school district in Illinois, whether they're going to have half the kids come in the morning and half in the afternoon. And I said, well, then you could give the kids who aren't there, when they're not there, they can be doing their group work together. And when they're in class, then they can be getting the instruction from you. So I guess that might be one of the ways that it would work, but we really don't know, I don't think. So what are some of the things that you're worried about for your students during this time? Have you been able to really make contact with all of them or most of them, or is it 50%? What do you think?
I have not been able to make contact with all of them. I have talked with many of my parents and the students. Those that have not connected with us on the virtual classroom hangouts, I've talked to on the telephone and things like that. And I've actually, you know, just couldn't keep myself from driving down some of the streets and just seeing if they're hanging out there and waving and you know, hi, how are you all doing? And you know, they're happy to see us. They miss us just as much as we miss them, as I miss them. And so, you know, I have unfortunately haven't had to be able to not able to contact be in contact with a couple of mine, and I believe that's due to a move, and we don't have that forwarding information. So that's been difficult. But being able to speak with them on the phone, being able to see them on the virtual hangouts is really exciting.
Amy, what is the percentage in your classroom that you've had contact with, you think?
Well, I think I only have 3 students that I've not been able to make contact with the family directly, but I have been able to speak with 2 of the grandparents. So really there's only 1 family that I have not been able to connect with.
Do you think it's, not having the devices, not having the internet, or both things, or is it not knowing how to make contact?
Most of my family's, the contact comes via phone call.
Mm-hmm.
There's one family that I don't have updated phone numbers for. I've had, I think, 5 students been able to join online at some point throughout this time off. So it's been really nice to be able to see them. One of the students, just yesterday, it was just her on the video chat, and she wanted some help with some work that we had sent home. So I pulled the page up on the computer and we worked through the page together, and it was me and one other teacher, and she had 30 minutes of one-on-one learning time with us, and that was great. But most of the contact with the families have been phone calls.
Is that true for you too as well, Tonya?
Exactly, yes. Most of it has been through phone calls.
Right.
I want to speak of one grandparent that's really trying so hard to get her grandson to connect, but like we were saying, if they're not tech savvy, and you know, the child is not able to get on, but I have talked with her and him on several occasions, so we're still trying, we're still working. I told her not to give up to get him connected to the Google Classroom, so.
Right.
Yes.
Let me just reintroduce, you're listening to WGTD HDFM. I'm your host, Karen Sconzert, and this is Education Matters. This discussion of Carthage College Urban Teacher Prep Program's response to COVID-19 is archived at WGTD.org on the Education Matters page. You're invited to listen again, or you can find our WGTD Education Matters Facebook page and join in a discussion there. So we talked a little bit about how your teaching might change. Are there any students who have actually seemed to be thriving under these conditions, whether they're your own or people that you've heard from? Do they like being able to hang out with their parents more, or is it you're just not sure what's going on because you have so little contact?
I would say for me, I would not really be able to answer that because I don't have enough contact to know
whether it's people's. Yeah.
Yes, yes.
Yeah. Amy, do you have this similar?
I think that I've only had consistent contact with 2 students throughout this, and they're able to do at least as much, if not a little bit more, than what they were when we were in the classroom. So those 2 students that have been able to connect consistently throughout this are definitely making some progress. I think that they enjoy more of the personalized lessons that they get, because it's a lot easier in a one-to-one situation to gear lessons towards what they're interested in.
Mm-hmm.
And I think they enjoy that extra one-on-one attention that they have been able to get that we don't always get to do in a classroom full of students. So I think some of them are doing well.
But the converse is probably the ones that you can't have as much contact with. Are you worried about them? Do you think it's going to be tough for them next fall? Have they missed a lot of things this spring?
Anything that I've offered online, I've been able to offer via paper packets that the district has sent out. And I try not to do too much more online above and beyond what I send out because I want it to be as equitable as possible, regardless of a student's situation or access or anything like that. When I've been making phone calls, a lot of the parents are saying the kids are doing the packets of work. So you just trust that, you know, the parents are doing the best that they can. I offer support every time I am able to talk with them, and just provide as many opportunities as possible during this time.
Mm-hmm. Tonya, are there any students that you're worried about?
I would say all of them, just because we're not, you know, in that traditional, or none of them are able to get the lessons that they would get if we were in the classroom. So I would say I am worried about all of them.
Right.
I am pleased. And I know, Adriana is as well, that, we're able to even connect with students that are not in my homeroom, but I teach them through the year because my team member and I, we rotate. She teaches a couple of subjects and I teach a couple of subjects. So it's been really nice to see students from her homeroom that join us on our Google Classroom Hangout. So that's been a plus as well.
Great. So I have a question now for Siobhan and Adriana. So going forward, is there anything that you're thinking that needs to be added to your teacher preparation with the idea of preparing for, you know, whether it's next year or some other thing that happens 15 years from now? What do we need to add so that all of the new teachers are kind of ready for anything?
So I can comment on that. I think this situation has made us realize not only how flexible our teacher coaches are, but how flexible and how tech savvy our teacher candidates are as well. And I think it's been a plus for them. They are finding new apps and ways to deliver instruction that will be helpful even in the classroom. So I think going forward, what we would incorporate into the Urban Teacher Prep program that would be beneficial is tech tool time. Just having, you know, sometimes our teacher candidates are not able to sit in on the professional development that Tonya spoke of, but just being able to kind of interact with their teacher coaches about what their class, because it varies. Kindergartners would need different tech tools than a fourth grade classroom would, but just what would your class need? How can we introduce it to them early? How can we get the parents involved so that they know? Can we do a parent night? One of the things that we're getting more involved with, or with the Urban Teacher Prep program, is community, because Julian Thomas is a community school, as well as Knapp Elementary, which is another school in our program. And we want to be able to educate our parents before they have to kind of learn this in the 11th hour. Some of them don't even know what a Google Classroom is, or how to access it on a phone or iPad. And so just having that conversation about fun and innovative ways to introduce technology to students and parents and incorporating it in their lessons every day.
Yeah, Adriana, is there anything that you've added to your skill set or that you plan to add?
Yeah, so this semester, once we went virtual, we, as teacher candidates, were kind of tasked with creating a tutorial or a video for parents. And I think that's something that is super important even when we're not virtual, like Siobhan said, and Ms. Wilson said earlier, like teaching our parents how to access Google Classroom, not just our students. And I think that once we teach our parents as well, it'll create more involvement for them as well, because they also know how to do it. And so I think just like once we're not virtual, or even if we have to remain virtual, teaching our parents how to be tech savvy as well is going to be really important.
Well, that's all really terrific. I really want to say thank you to our guests today, Carthage student Adriana Santana, who is in the Urban Teacher Prep Program, teachers Tonya Wilson and Amy Simon, who teach at Julian Thomas Elementary.